Welcome to Fear on Four. The Chimes of Midnight by Nick Fisher, starring David Suchet.
Time. The trickling grains of sand. The switch of the pendulum. The waxing and the waning of the moon, the sun, and the stars. Time, encasing our lives as our bodies wither and perish and decay to the ceaseless march of its seconds, minutes, hours. Time, the subject of my working life. How and when did it begin? How and when will it end? What is its relationship with space and with humankind? This was the field of my work as holder of the Chair of Theoretical Physics at Christ Church, Oxford. And such were the questions I posed, not only with my doctorate students, but also in lecture halls at large, where I discovered an avid public thirsting for more knowledge of their place in the cosmos.
Thus, we can look back to the creation of the universe, to the beginning of time itself, at the Big Bang singularity, as we can indeed look forward to the eventual heat death of the universe and the absolute end of time as we understand it. But one question remains. Can time exist without us? If humankind ceased to be, would time have any meaning? And if not, then would anything at all exist? For how could it, beyond the ultimate of all boundaries, time?
So stimulating, Professor Hargreaves.
Thank you. Nice audience. I enjoyed it.
Good. Now, we're booked for dinner at the Savoy.
Excellent.
But first, there are drinks in the hospitality suite. There's quite a few VIPs waiting to have a word.
Of course. But if it's all right with you, I'd just like a couple of minutes to myself. Cigarette on the terrace to relax before meeting everyone.
Oh, by all means. We'll see you in hospitality in 5 minutes. I'll keep the bubbly on ice.
Thank you. Most kind. Fine lecture.
God! I thought I was alone. Where did you spring from?
I was here all the time.
Seemed like you came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere? Hardly possible.
Indeed, as I understand physics, and I trust I do rather well, not at all possible.
Forgive me for having startled you. Allow me to introduce myself. Jonathan Tempre, habitual dealer in antiquities and occasional frequenter of scintillating lectures.
You liked it?
I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Thank you.
We share some common ground, you and I.
Really? How that?
You specialize in understanding time. I specialize in collecting it and dealing in it.
Collecting and dealing in time?
Yes. Or to be more accurate, time pieces.
Oh, I see. Antique clocks.
Exactly so.
Well, I've got quite a decent collection myself. Maybe rather an obvious hobby for me, but I enjoy it.
A happy coincidence. Perhaps you'd like to visit my shop in Greenwich. Once there, I'm sure I could tempt you.
Tempt me?
To purchase an item or two.
I'm afraid I'm back to Oxford early tomorrow.
No matter, you can come tonight.
Well, unfortunately, there's hospitality laid on for me.
No matter, come afterwards.
It's liable to be pretty late.
No matter. Let's say midnight, shall we?
How I wish I had never accepted. How could I have foreseen? Not that I was unhappy when I arrived at his shop, certainly not with the Dom Perignon still bubbling in my blood. Indeed, once inside, I was like a child in a toy shop.
Well, what do you think?
Fantastic. Good Lord, is this a John Arnold?
It is. 1779. A very fine mechanism. Oh. Though still requiring oil, of course. Unlike this.
Thomas Earnshaw. With spring detent escapement. No more pivots, so no more oil. A revolutionary moment.
You know your horology, Professor.
Well, I know a little.
What would be the earliest clock you have seen?
Outside a museum, probably a Nicholas Vanin, 1590 or thereabouts.
Is that all? Perhaps you would like to see the jewel of my collection.
But you have something older?
By far. By centuries.
Centuries? I don't believe you.
Oh, but you will. Come.
Where to?
I keep it across the courtyard, in a cellar beneath the old stables.
For security?
For exact placing on the Greenwich Meridian.
Of a gloomy spot to keep the jewel of your collection.
Too much light is harmful for such a delicate piece. Nonetheless, I will illuminate it now for the chimes of midnight.
My God.
It is but 5 seconds to 12. Wait.
What do you want for this?
I'm afraid it is not for sale.
But I must have it. I have never seen anything to compare. How much?
It would be beyond your means.
My books are bestsellers.
Well, I suppose I would know it was going to the right person, someone who would care for it, appreciate it, enter the spirit of it.
Please, Mr. Tempray, just name your price.
You paid him what?
I know. But the advance on the next book covers that. And just look at it. Just listen to it.
Well, yes, it is nice.
But... nice? It's peerless. Look. Have you ever seen such a mechanism?
Certainly not such a complex one.
But that's because there are so many more things it does than just count the minutes and hours. Oh, it's quarter past. Now, listen. Listen.
Now that is beautiful. Oh, and look. The little figures are all moving.
The automata. I know. Aren't they wonderful? I said it was peerless, and it is.
What are all the dials and spheres for?
But I don't know yet. Well, this one's obviously for mapping the position of the sun, the moon, and the planets.
But what about this?
No idea. Though the outside edge seems to reflect months, years, and centuries.
Looks like it was built to run forever.
I cleared out the guest room and put blinds over the windows to keep the chronometer in total darkness, except when I was studying its Byzantine complexity. Each day I witnessed something new. Incredibly, the delicate little automata that travelled about the timepiece never repeated the same moves. Likewise, the ticks and clicks and whirs continually assumed a subtly changing rhythm. And the chimes... for melodies and cadences, forever shifting in glorious harmony, never repeating quite the same tune. They became something I could not bear to miss. particularly the mesmerizing chimes of midnight.
We have all the time in the world.
Richard, have you heard a word we've been saying?
What? Yes, of course.
Really?
You know what I think. He's having an affair.
Oh.
Yeah, that dreamy look smacks of a mistress in some slinky little Anne Summers numero.
What would you know about Anne Summers numeros, Toby?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Well, you've never bought me anything like that.
Yet.
Promises, promises.
So what was going on in there, Richard?
Oh, pondering a chapter for the new book.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know how I get. More Armagnac, Warren.
Please.
So what's the problem, Richard?
Problem?
A chapter in the new book is clearly more engrossing than my after-dinner banter.
No, it's simply a question of time.
Well, naturally, it always is with you.
No, a thorny little moment, that's all.
Oh, look, I'm aware I'm a humble research metallurgist rather than the new Einstein. But try me. Look, I mean, these tomes of yours are meant to be accessible to the general public, aren't they?
All right. What I'm pondering, alongside Einstein, as it happens, is the anthropic principle.
Ah, which is?
Roughly, that we need to be in the universe for the universe to be.
Ah, like students need to be in the university for the university to be.
I'm not sure about that. Now, I'm suggesting we're here, human intelligence has developed, because we're an essential component of our universe. It couldn't exist as it does without us.
Isn't that metaphysics rather than astrophysics?
Not entirely, Moira, because also by observing the universe, we interfere with it. That is, we change it by looking at it.
You just lost me.
Well, to study subatomic particles, we need to observe them.
Well, that's obvious.
Yeah, but to do that, we need to illuminate them, and that changes them. You see, placing light on those tiny particles alters their position or their velocity. So, we're never passive observers. Furthermore, we never observe what we set out to. By the time we see it, we've altered it.
And
that's what I was pondering. Because that seems to suggest that the entire universe doesn't exist in any real sense without us.
But what's that got to do with time?
A lot. Because if we can't measure the state of the universe exactly at this moment, what are our chances of predicting future events? Of course, that's why quantum mechanics introduced the uncertainty principle. Look, let me illustrate something with my watch. Dan, it stopped. What's the time?
Your watch has. Is that really part of this, or simply your idea of a joke?
Now, what's the time? Right now, the time?
Just on midnight.
Sod it.
Richard! Richard!
Well, looks like the pressure of the big concept is getting to our star theoretician.
Richard, what's going on?
I didn't want to miss the chimes of midnight.
What? But what about Toby and Moira?
Oh, they'll understand.
Eccentric academic rushes off without saying goodbye, leaving his guests to wander off into the night. But that's okay, as it's just par for the course with a brilliant cosmologist.
Sorry.
Anyway, what's so compulsive about these chimes?
Well, I've been studying the way the clock behaves, especially at midnight. The complexity and variety of sound and movement is simply astonishing. Now what I want to do is get to grips with the way the internal mechanism works.
So you're observing exterior changes the better to understand what lies behind what you see?
Precisely that.
Richard Hargreaves, trust you to examine a clock the same way you'd approach the universe. Now, as our guests have gone, perhaps you'd like to examine and approach me.
It's entitled The Gravity of the Question of Time.
And the lecture's subject matter?
It examines the effect of gravity on the movement of time. Rejecting notions of absolute time, it suggests that the four great forces of the universe, electromagnetic, strong nuclear, weak nuclear, and above all gravitational, actually interact with our idea of time itself.
Oh, excellent. I'm sure we can guarantee you a packed house in Edinburgh, Professor.
Sorry, I must go. Come in. Bye for now.
Got a watch that works yet?
Toby. As a matter of fact, I have.
Mary pointed out that wasn't too bright for someone in my position.
So, what's this mysterious clock of yours?
What? What do you know about that?
Very little. Hence my question.
Yeah, but how do you know about it at all?
Well, when you dashed out the other night, Mary said it might have been related to your latest clock. So, what is it?
It's just an old chronometer.
Oh, and naturally you dive out of dinner parties in a total lather for the sake of an old chronometer.
All right. It's probably the most beautiful man-made artifact I have ever seen in my life.
That's all right.
What?
Obviously pretty old.
Pretty old?
I'd rather have a Rolex any day.
A Rolex? You're mad!
I'm also a liar. It's stupendous. I'm not surprised you want to keep it secret. You know, if they heard about it, the British Museum would probably slap some compulsory purchase order on it.
Oh, Rolex. You had me going there. Yeah, have a look inside.
Beautiful.
I've started to unscrew some of the panels. If I could just ease those plates to one side. Now, could you hold a screwdriver?
Of course.
That's it. Now, I don't want that spring to shift. Uh-huh. Now then. Yes, I think this will work.
Oh, careful. It'd be criminal to damage this.
Well, I think we're all right. There. That's odd.
What is?
The little box with the cog and ratchet. What's that for?
No idea. What's this made of, Richard?
Mainly wood, I think. Lots of early clocks were. Famously, a wonderful John Harrison
piece. No wood? I don't think so.
Well, you're the metallurgist, Toby. You're not going to tell me it's Sheffield steel, are you?
No, absolutely not. I doubt if any of it's metal, but I don't know if it's wood either.
Well, what else could it be?
Good question. Could I take some tiny shavings to the lab for analysis, find out if it is wood? If so, what sort?
Well, you'll be very careful.
Yeah, of course, nothing will show.
The universe grows to a finite point before it begins to fall back upon itself in a state of increasing disorganization. Rather like the gravitational collapse of certain stars to form black holes. This will eventually lead us back, as it were, to the point in the future where we began, with what has been dubbed the Big Crunch, when time is concluded. The second hand stops forever. Yet the point of the universe is still there.
How was Edinburgh?
Oh, boggled a few brains, but that'll do them no lasting damage. Hmm. How have things been with you?
Exceptionally peculiar. I've got some results from those samples. First, no metal present.
Told you. So, what sort of wood is it?
It isn't.
What do you mean?
There's no wood at all.
That's not possible.
Hmm. Have a look at the cross-section under the microscope.
And?
Now, have a glance at this.
Looks very much the same.
It is, unhappily.
Are they both from the chronometer?
No, the second one's from a friend in anthropology.
Anthropology?
Richard, this is human bone. That's what the clock's casing is made of. Compacted human bone. The enamelling effect is produced by the addition of teeth.
What?
Well, there's more. Some of the more delicate components are made of dried skin tissue. Some of the finest springs are hair, and the automata are mainly teeth and fingernail. But I've traced tiny amounts of, well, everything in them.
What do you mean, everything?
Like dried internal organs. The entire clock has been fashioned from someone's body, Richard.
I went home. The clock was brooding as before in its darkened room. The clock made entirely of human parts. I had to know more about its origins. I wondered if the antique dealer might be able to shed some light on its history. So the next evening, I returned to the Greenwich Meridian.
This isn't a shop.
But I bought a clock here only a couple of weeks ago.
You must have got the address wrong. There are plenty of antique shops in Greenwich. I'm sure you'll find it if you hunt about.
But it was here.
I'm sorry, you're mistaken. Now, good night.
Good evening, Professor.
Why aren't you where you were?
Why am I not where I was? Wouldn't physics suggest that I have exerted energy to shift the mass of my body through a small amount of space and time? That is, I have moved.
But your shop was there only 2 weeks ago.
Merely temporary premises. Would you like to join me for a drink at my workshop? It is nearby.
Happily. I wanted to pick your brains anyway.
Pick my brains?
Now, I want to find out as much as I can about the clock's history. And I was wondering if you have any information that might help. For instance, where did you buy it?
It was a gift, as it was also a gift to you.
Sorry?
Your check to purchase it, uncashed.
Why?
I'm not here for money.
An antique dealer not making money?
I'm not exactly an antique dealer. Let us say, I am the keeper of the clock.
How can you be its keeper? You haven't kept it.
Haven't I? You recognize it?
Of course I do. But what's it doing here?
I made a trip to your house and retrieved it.
You stole it?
Absolutely not. Tell me, have you managed to understand its mechanism?
Largely. Except for the sealed box at the centre.
The clock's motor.
Nonsense, it's too old for such a thing. Besides, what could it run on?
It is indeed too old for a motor in the mechanical sense. I use the word poetically. The clock's motor is as old as mankind. Unfortunately, it cannot last forever. It and various other parts of the clock need regular renewal. That time has now come.
I passed out and came to, strapped to a frame. Clearly I'd been drugged, for I felt no pain as I lay there, paralyzed and suspended in time. No, none at all. As I watched the keeper of the clock cut open my body, slicing through pink skin and yellow fat as the blood welled about his hands to remove my heavy, slithery heart. I watched as he transferred it, still pulsing gently, into a little box which he sealed and exchanged for the motor of the clock.
You do understand how the clock must be maintained till the end of time. Now then.
He sliced two tiny, worm-like shavings from my liver and placed them as lips on one of the automata. A thumb then prized out my left eyeball. There it sat, startled and unblinking in the palm of his hand. The knife cored out little balls of cornea, and he popped them into the waiting sockets of the same automaton. And suddenly, I found I could now look out from the face of the clock and down at a tiny machine of a body. Meanwhile, pliers drew out my fingernails, blood dribbling aimlessly from the torn sockets they left behind. These were fashioned into little limbs to replace the worn ones of my automaton form.
Now, this won't hurt, but it will inevitably feel odd.
Incredibly, still I felt nothing, except for a strange sensation of space. And to my amazement and my horror, I found I could now witness events looking down through galaxy upon galaxy at myself as he carefully cut slivers of my brain. Soft, wet, variegated cross-sections of temporal lobe, and started to place them inside the chronometer.
The anthropological clock must be conscious. Without that, time has no meaning. It has to be aware of itself.
Not only my body, but my mind was incorporated. I wasn't merely inside the clock or just part of it. In a very real sense, I was the clock.
When, on some midnight of the future, your heart gives up the struggle, another will be selected to fuel the chronological register. But even then, your consciousness will remain spinning through space, on and on, until the end of time. Farewell.
The clock. Small and so precise, yet embracing the entire universe, all the rocketing galaxies still red-shifting apart. But I knew one far distant day the mechanism would begin to slow. The galaxies would cascade back upon themselves. The heat of existence would cease, space would compact, and time would be over and done. I looked down at the tiny automaton that was my body, trapped and encased in time. And I began to scream. And scream. And scream. But there was no one. No one at all. To hear.
In The Chimes of Midnight by Nick Fisher, David Suchet was Professor Richard Hargreaves. Jonathan Tempre was played by John Rowe. Mary, Jenny Lee. Toby, Christopher Wright. And Moira, Alison Pettit. The woman at the lecture was Gilly Mears. With thanks to the Horological Students' Room at the British Museum. The Chimes of Midnight was directed by Marion Nancarrow.